details and let you know.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59. Coming up next is your evening news after these short messages.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion in Portland. The Mochitsky Festival celebrates the New Year by sharing Japanese-American culture with the community. The festival features hands-on activities for all ages, cultural foods, vendors, and a wide variety of demonstrations and performances, including taiko drumming, Japanese dance, storytelling, mochi pounding, martial art demos, and much more. Again, that's the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion, 930 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Katie Jane and the Celtic Light Orchestra performance on Saturday, January 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Community Music Center in Portland. Katie Jane and the Celtic Light Orchestra combine Celtic music, interactive lights, Irish dancing, and fun. Pre-show attendees are invited to participate in the magical music petting zoo, where they can touch and play instruments that inspire the creative mind. Again, that's the Katie Jane and Celtic Light Orchestra performance on Saturday, January 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Community Music Center, 3350 Southeast Francis Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon is set to increase shelter funding.
Farm worker protections were updated in Washington state.
And in international news, the coronavirus outbreak continues to worsen in China.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. I'm Nat Moon.
And I'm Andrew Geller. Oregon House Speaker Tina Kotek is preparing a bill that would allocate $40 million to create new housing shelters, the state's largest investment ever to assist the houseless. The bill would declare a, quote, homelessness state of emergency, unquote, allowing local governments to bypass zoning restrictions when siting shelters and other needed spaces for houseless people to escape the elements. While Portland started to ease its zoning restrictions to provide shelters years ago, Kotek's bill could be important in other communities that have pushed back on allowing public camping without hosting shelters or public hygiene centers. Kotek said that the money would largely go toward getting year-round shelters on the ground by fall in communities across the state that currently have zero or little capacity. While Governor Kate Brown spoke Friday of a $500 million investment in affordable housing during her tenure, the state has spent little on people who have already lost their housing.
Washington farm workers were at the state capitol in Olympia this week, pushing for an update to the Washington Farm Labor Contractor Act. KBOO reporter Yasmin Kobanoglu has the story.
The landscape for farms and farm workers has changed significantly in the past 70 years, so farm workers advocates want the Evergreen State to update the Washington Farm Labor Contractor Act. This week, legislators held a hearing on Senate Bill 6261, including testimony from farm workers. Antonio Ganata, policy director at Columbia Legal Services, says it's part of an effort to address reform to the H-2A program, which allows guest farm workers from other countries into the United States on temporary visas. He noted that about one-third of the agriculture workforce comes from outside the United States.
There wasn't an H-2A visa program back in the 50s, back in 85, the last time this Farm Labor Contractor Act was actually amended. So what we're trying to do is modernize it, is make it relevant to the agricultural industry in Washington today.
Gnotta said the bill would clarify liability for farm employers who use unlicensed contractors and address retaliation against workers who speak up about labor concerns. At Tuesday's hearing, ag industry representatives said the retaliation provision in this bill is too expansive and would be onerous to employers. For workers in the state through the H-2A program, retaliation for speaking up about labor conditions is a concern. Edgar Franks, political director of the Northwest Washington Farm Workers Union, Familias Unidas por la Justicia, said H-2A laborers have been denied the opportunity to work in the country again if they strike or seek help from organizations such as his.
We've seen the issue of blacklisting now as a way that farm labor contractors and employers retaliate against workers that they think are unruly.
Rosalinda Guyen, executive director of the farm worker advocacy group Community to Community Development, said the bill also would address a loophole that exempts nonprofits from the Washington Farm Labor Contractor Act. She said she doesn't believe farm worker recruiters should be able to hold nonprofit status.
It's a profit-making operation, and we believe that farm labor contractors in the state of Washington should not be nonprofits. So that's one of the biggest things this bill is addressing.
The text of SB 6261 is online at app.leg.wa.gov. This is KABU reporter Yasmin Kobanoglu in collaboration with Eric Tegedoff of the Public News Service.
There was another major spike in cases of the coronavirus in China, and confirmed death toll from the outbreak has risen to at least 17. As of midnight Tuesday, there were more than 540 reported cases of the respiratory illness in Wuhan, a city of 11 million people, and the location of the outbreak that began in early December. Many cases of infection have also been found outside China's borders. According to Gao Fu, the head of the Chinese Center for Disease Control, the virus is mutating, which can cause it to spread faster and present more severely in humans. The issue is intensified due to the fact that millions of Chinese people plan to travel across the country Friday for the Lunar New Year migration, and Wuhan is a critical transport hub. Authorities in Beijing announced strict quarantine measures on Wuhan that will allow hospitals to isolate any suspected carriers of the virus and their close contacts against their will if necessary. Officials in Wuhan have been criticized for allowing an event with 40,000 people expected to go ahead last weekend. In response, Wuhan has postponed 41 large-scale events planned for the Lunar New Year this weekend, and has added more infrared thermometers at the airport and train stations in an attempt to stop the disease from spreading. Yesterday, 15 medical workers in Wuhan were confirmed as testing positive for the virus. Beijing has also received some criticism for censoring coverage of the coronavirus when journalists from Hong Kong who visited a Wuhan hospital last week were detained and asked to hand in their cameras for inspection. The first U.S. case of the virus was reported yesterday in Everett, Washington. Other confirmed reports of infection exist in Thailand, Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan. In a meeting today, the World Health Organization postponed making a decision on whether or not the virus poses a global health emergency.
Beaverton High School allowed students to return today after a fire inside the school damaged several classrooms over the weekend. The district was forced to close school for a few days to clean up the damage. According to Alton Valley Fire and Rescue, the fire began Saturday morning in a classroom on the second floor of the building. The fire appeared to be caused by the failure of a small refrigerator. Investigators have determined that there was no foul play involved and the fire was accidental. The principal of Beaverton High School, Ann Irwin, wrote in a note to the community that the fire damaged several classrooms on the building's west side, which would restrict access to that wing for at least a week. Irwin added that this is finals week for students, so the affected classes would be moved to a different part of the school for the exams. School was canceled on Tuesday while the building was tested for air quality. According to Irwin, the area of the school where the fire started endured heavy smoke and water damage. Those parts of the building are off limits to students while the damage is being repaired. There is so far no estimate for how much the damage will cost. Irwin also added that the Beaverton School District would provide support for staff and students to deal with the trauma, loss, and disruption of routines.
One-time mayoral candidate Cameron Witten has now entered the race for the Metro Council seat that represents Northwest, Northeast, and North Portland. The seat is currently held by Sam Chase, who recently announced his run for the seat previously held by the late Commissioner Nick Fish. Witten, 28, is the director of the Q Center, an LGBTQ community space in Portland, and founder of Brown Hope, a racial justice nonprofit. Witten joined the Occupy Portland movement in 2011 and was arrested several times there for refusing to leave. In 2012, he ran for mayor and then went on a two-month hunger strike outside of Portland City Hall to protest what he saw as deficiencies in the city's services for houseless people. He has been endorsed by several local leaders, including City Commissioner Amanda Fritz, former State Senator Avelle Gordley, former U.S. Congresswoman Elizabeth Furse, and former Mayor Sam Adams. Witten will be running against at least two other candidates in the May 19th race for the Metro seat, former State Representative Mary Nolan and Karen Spencer.
Craig Lazen of Albany, Oregon, has been charged with the murder of his estranged wife, Tiffany, whom family members hadn't heard from since Christmas of last year. While investigating Tiffany's disappearance, police learned that Craig had borrowed a battery-operated circular saw from a friend and returned it several days later. The Oregon State Crime Lab found bodily tissue and blood on the saw, which testing revealed matched Tiffany's DNA. Police said they served several search warrants in the past week that provided evidence that Tiffany was dead. In 2015, Craig was charged with 9 counts related to domestic violence, including attempted aggravated murder, strangulation, and assault. All of those charges were dismissed in December of 2015 after Craig pleaded guilty to 1 count of tampering with a witness, for which he was sentenced to only 3 years in prison.
A new bill introduced in the Oregon State Senate could imprison protesters for wearing masks for up to 10 years and increase potential fines to $250,000. The bill, proposed today by Republican Representative Sherry Sprenger, would double penalties for protesters and is part of a national and international trend seeking to crack down on masked protesters. The bill is unlikely to receive much attention this legislative session.
Less than half of the adults in the United States know how many Jewish people were killed in the Holocaust, according to a recent national survey by the Pew Research Center. According to the survey, less than 70% of the 11,000 people asked knew that the Holocaust happened between 1930 and 1950. The Anti-Defamation League's annual audit for 2018 recorded the third highest total number of anti-Semitic incidents since it began publishing data 40 years ago. A report to be published by the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism says anti-Semitic hate crimes in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago are poised to hit an 18-year peak. The Pew survey also found that only 43% of respondents knew that Hitler became German chancellor through a democratic vote, with 1 in 4 people believing he and his supporters violently overthrew the government. January 27th marks the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, the death camp in German-occupied Poland where over 1.2 million people were tortured and murdered. Up to 200 survivors are expected to attend a memorial service at the former camp, with commemorations to take place around the world.
President Trump continued suggesting today that he will cut social safety net programs like Medicare to reduce the federal deficit, a clear shift from his 2016 campaign promise to protect funding for those programs. The federal budget deficit has ballooned under Trump as a result of tax cuts and additional government spending. Trump has already proposed cuts for some safety net programs, calling for a total of $1.9 trillion in cuts from Medicaid and Medicare, as well as spending $26 billion less on Social Security programs and $10 billion less on the Social Security Disability Insurance Program. The Treasury Department reported last week that the federal budget deficit surpassed $1 trillion in fiscal 2019.
With the backing of the Mormon Church, Utah has banned LGBTQ plus conversion therapy for children, becoming the 19th state to do so. The Mormon Church opposes same-sex marriage and teaches that intimate same-sex relationships are a sin, but also urges members to be kind and compassionate to LGBTQ plus people. A 2019 British study found that people who received the discredited practice of conversion therapy were more likely to have suicidal thoughts, anxiety, and depression. Also yesterday, the Virginia Senate voted to ban conversion therapy as part of a set of bills which would protect LGBTQ plus rights.
The Virginia Senate approved a controversial red flag law today, disregarding tens of thousands of pro-gun activists who protested the pending legislation in Richmond days ago. A red flag law allows police to temporarily confiscate firearms from people deemed by a judge to be a danger to themselves or others. The bill passed the Senate along party lines and will likely sail through that state's house. However, enforcing the law will most likely prove to be challenging. 91 out of 95 Virginia counties have declared, quote, Second Amendment sanctuary, unquote, status since November 2019, when Democrats won control of the Virginia legislature for the first time since 1994. The phrase Second Amendment sanctuary, in this case, means the counties are claiming it's up to them to decide which gun laws to enforce and which to ignore. 13 states have passed red flag laws since the Parkland shooting in 2018. Virginia would become the 18th state to pass a red flag law.
The South Dakota Water Management Board has approved permits for construction of the Keystone XL pipeline project, sparking continuing concerns over water, cultural sites, and the safety of Native women. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The South Dakota Water Management Board has approved permits for construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. After a dozen days of hearings held over the past 9 months, the board Tuesday voted unanimously to allow TransCanada, or TC Energy, to draw water from three South Dakota rivers. The board also allowed Wink Cattle Company and landowners Dean and Lori Wilson to use water for worker camps the company intends to build on their property. TC Energy has reported that it intends to start pre-construction activities next month, with groundbreaking to occur in April. The company intends to complete the pipeline in two construction seasons. Native people were among opponents to testify at the hearings, raising concerns over water, cultural sites, and the safety of Native women. Tribes and environmentalists still have two active lawsuits in federal court challenging the pipeline project. Unrecognized tribes in Alaska seeking federal status will have to demonstrate more than 80 years of history under a process proposed by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The Department of Interior currently reviews such petitions on a case-by-case basis. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
The proposed rule would require bands of Alaska Natives seeking tribal status to prove a common bond at least as back as far as 1936. But a Washington, D.C. attorney representing two unrecognized tribes with federal petitions pending says he's concerned this would further slow things down. Michael Willis represents the Katuchek in Seward and the Kanaganek in the Bristol Bay region. Both have sought federal recognition since the 1990s.
It seems like the Department of Interior is trying to find ways to delay yet again rather than treat Katuchek Native tribe consistently with other Alaska Native entities who have organized under the Alaska IRA.
He's referring to the Indian Reorganization Act, the landmark law passed in the 1930s that guides tribal recognition. BIA is holding meetings and tribal consultations around Alaska as it takes public comment through March 2nd. So far, several tribes and Alaska Native organizations have written to express skepticism that a new rule would be necessary. The Bureau of Indian Affairs did not respond to requests for comment. For National Native News, I'm Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Alaska.
The Bighorn County Attorney's Office in Montana is seeking evidence surrounding the disappearance of Selena Not Afraid to examine if any criminal charges should be filed. The 16-year-old went missing on New Year's Day. Searchers found her body Monday near a rest area on Interstate 90 between Billings and Hardin. Witnesses say she was last seen near the rest stop and walked into a field after a vehicle broke down. The sheriff's office says no foul play is suspected as they wait for an autopsy. The Crow Nation has expressed sorrow and is providing support to her family and the tribal community. Not Afraid's grandmother, Francine Amiot, spoke with Yellowstone Public Radio days before she was found and shared some memories of her granddaughter at the Crow Fair.
And she came over and stood by me and she said, "Grandma, either you're getting a little shorter or I'm getting a little taller." I said, "I think it's both." And we laughed and... And then she gave me a kiss on the forehead like I was the young child.
The county attorney's office in a press release pledges full and independent prosecutorial review of all evidence associated with the discovery of Not Afraid. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the Boo. At 6, it's The Underground. And then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will have light winds and it's going to rain. Low will be about 49. Tomorrow will also have that same south wind and it's going to rain. High of about 54. Today in history... In 2018, visionary and celebrated author Ursula K. Le Guin died at the age of 88 in her home here in Portland. The quote of the day is from Le Guin. Quote, "You cannot buy the revolution. You cannot make the revolution. You can only be the revolution. It is in your spirit or it is nowhere."
A new report has found that the amount of material consumed by humanity has surpassed 100 billion tons per year. In addition, the proportion of those materials that end up being recycled is declining. The report was conducted by the Circle Economy think tank and was revealed at the World Economic Forum in Davos. The report shows that materials used by the global economy have quadrupled since 1970. In just the last 2 years, consumption has increased by more than 8%. The report found that, on average, every person on Earth uses more than 13 tons of materials per year. In 2017, over 100 billion tons of materials were consumed. Half of that total is from sand, clay, gravel, and cement used for building, while coal, oil, and gas make up 15%, and metal ore 10%. The final 25% are plants and trees used for food and fuel. The report warns that treating the world's resources as limitless is leading toward global disaster. The report says that increasing recycling can make economies more competitive, improve living conditions, help to meet emissions targets, and avoid deforestation. The co-chair of the United Nations Environment Program, Yanez Potocnik, said the world needs to learn to do more with less and replace ownership with sharing, as is already increasingly being seen with cars.
Greece's parliament has elected the country's first female president. Katerina Sakellaropoulou, a high court judge and human rights advocate, was nominated by the ruling conservative New Democracy Party. She also managed to secure the backing of Syriza, the main opposition party, as well as the center-left Movement for Change. Sakellaropoulou was the first woman to serve as the president for the Council of State, Greece's top administrative court. In the parliamentary vote on Wednesday, she received the support of 261 out of 300 parliamentary members, much more than the 200 required by the Constitution. Greece's prime minister has faced criticism about the lack of women in his cabinet, and some see this choice as a countermove. Greece has been lagging behind other European countries when it comes to the number of women in senior positions in politics. The country scores below the European average in gender equality, and according to Eurostat, the pay gap between men and women in 2017 was more than 12%. The selection is unique not only because Sakellaropoulou is a woman, but also because she is not a member of a political party. In Greece, the president serves a 5-year term and holds a mostly ceremonial position.
Brazilian prosecutors filed a criminal complaint on Tuesday against The Intercept co-founder Glenn Greenwald, alleging that Greenwald, quote, directly assisted, encouraged, and guided, end quote, individuals who reportedly obtained access to online chats used by prosecutors involved in a years-long anti-corruption investigation. The operation, called Operation Car Wash, prosecuted major Brazilian construction firms and politicians, including former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, whose imprisonment kept him from running in the 2018 presidential election despite leading in the polls. The criminal complaint will now go before a judge who has the authority to approve or deny the request for charges. The filing directly contradicts a finding by Brazil's federal police, who found no wrongdoing on the part of Greenwald. The Intercept and Greenwald denounced the complaint today, as did a number of representatives from U.S. Congress, citing concerns over press of freedom.
With Trump on trial for this and that crime, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael resorts to rhyme.
Donnie don't care if you rag on his hair. Impeachment, lost election, he's not going anywhere. Just leave it to Mitch, that son of a turtle. He'll make sure this mock trial goes quick with no hurdles. But since the trial keeps Bernie and Liz from campaigning, Pete and Joey get free rein with rich donors entertaining. And what of us voters who won't get much choice as Facebook and big media overpower our voice? This 2020, get your vision clear. Lift your eyes from your devices. In compassion, knowledge, and community, we might prevent the coming crisis. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
President Trump stated that no U.S. troops were injured in the Iranian missile strike in Iraq earlier this month, but reports from the Pentagon tell a different story. On Friday of last week, the Pentagon admitted that 11 U.S. troops had been hospitalized for concussion-like symptoms. Then on Tuesday, Pentagon officials said that additional personnel had been sent to a U.S. military hospital in Germany for outpatient treatment. After calling the injuries, quote, not very serious, Trump further downplayed the severity of the injuries when asked if he considered traumatic brain injuries serious, saying, quote, no, I don't consider them very serious relative to other injuries that I've seen, end quote. The strike that caused injuries to U.S. soldiers was in response to a controversial drone strike ordered by Trump on January 3rd, which killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani.
Scientists have discovered fossils of fungi in the Democratic Republic of Congo from between 715 and 810 million years ago, long before the dawn of complex life. The discovery has huge implications for reconstructing the timeline of evolution on Earth, as the newly identified specimens are the oldest fungi ever found, more than 250 million years older than any other similar specimens. Fungi were among the first organisms known to colonize land environments, where they paved the way for plants and animals to follow their lead out of the oceans. According to scientists, the fossils support, quote, the possibility that fungi helped to colonize the land surface almost 300 million years before the first evidence of land plants.
Hawaii representative and presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard is suing Hillary Clinton for calling her, quote, a Russian asset, end quote. The $50 million lawsuit alleges that Tulsi has suffered significant actual damages personally and professionally that are estimated to exceed $50 million and continue to this day. The filing also states that, quote, Clinton's false assertions were made in a deliberate attempt to derail Tulsi's presidential campaign, end quote. These allegations are based on an interview Clinton gave in October 2019, where she also called 2016 Democratic presidential candidate Jill Stein a Russian asset. In July of 2019, Gabbard sued Google, also for $50 million, claiming the company suspended her campaign's advertising after the first Democratic debate in June. A hearing on that suit is reportedly set for January 27th.
Four Democratic candidates for the U.S. presidency are in Washington, D.C. this week for the Senate impeachment trial instead of on the campaign trail in Iowa, with less than 2 weeks until the first of the nation's many caucuses. With that story and more, here's Lily Bolke with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
Well, I'm certainly super excited to get out to towns and counties throughout the state over the next 2 weeks. I feel bad for my competitors that have to head to D.C. for this impeachment trial because I wish they were out campaigning too.
Businessman Andrew Yang, on his 18-day Iowa bus tour leading up to caucus night, he and the other non-senators, including former Vice President Joe Biden and former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, are going strong in their competitors' absence. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders canceled a rally at the University of Northern Iowa today, asking supporters to get out and stump for him while he's in Washington, as are surrogates for Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, and Michael Bennett of Colorado. Klobuchar recently explained her impending absence from the Hawkeye State at a packed community event in Johnston, Iowa.
While I am a jury representing our country in that hearing, you are also a jury. You're a big jury. Like a lot of people in a big jury box. And you are blessed, really, with the decision of who should lead our ticket in taking on this president. And it's not an easy decision. I know that. But I want to make my case to you tonight in this barn, which is very fitting. I like barns.
It's a tough time for Klobuchar to not be in Iowa with momentum building. She scored another local endorsement, the editorial board of Quad City Times, on the heels of the unconventional two-way nod for her and Warren from the New York Times board. And a recent Focus on Rural America poll has her at 11% in the Hawkeye State, her personal best. The poll also asked who would be most beneficial for rural America specifically, and Klobuchar led the field at 29%.